The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
يا أيها الذين آمنوا, O you who believe, استعينوا بالصبر والصلاة.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear audience of IRIB English Radio, now it's time to listen to a short speech by Sayyid Asad Jafari.
There's nothing more beautiful for me than to see a young kid, 10, 12, 13, 15, that's proud to be a Muslim. That stops and says, no, my name is Muhammad, not Muhammad. It's Ali, not Ali. You can do it. Say it with me. Oh, I tried very hard to get Asad. I got Assad, I'll take that. But Assad, I couldn't take. No, say it properly. That's all part of the pride factor. Because the flip side is that if you don't identify with the deen, then any remnant of the deen inside of you, from the physical hijab, to the beard, to the name on your business card, all will not resemble Islam. We run from that as far as possible. This is a crisis we're facing right now. And so naturally now, right, if you don't feel like you belong to the deen, you're not going to follow its tenets, you're not going to worship that God, you're just going to you go through the motions until one day and someday when you become an adult and you say, you know what, I'm denouncing my religion. I get too many phone calls that my kid told me I'm agnostic, I'm an atheist now, Malana. Apne Shia log, in this GTA, can you come and talk to them? And I go to their house, I talk to them, and I tell them, please, you know, tell me about your atheism, it sounds intriguing. Convert me to be an atheist. And there's nothing there. It's hollow. They just don't want to be Muslim. So the next best option is a freedom-seeking atheist. No worship, no accountability, no God. Sounds pretty good to them. It's a crisis. And we have to now dissect this across 10 nights. Lots to talk about. Oh my God, lots to talk about. But let's start off with history. I've learned to realize the hard way that history is very important in everything and every topic in the deen. There are people out there that are master historians. I was never like that. In class, in the Hausa, it was that tariq class that I would run from. I found it dry, I found it boring, but I realized over some time that history has a funny way of repeating itself. If we learn of those previous to us, we can avoid a lot of mistakes right now. Let's examine a little bit of the mission of the Holy Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wa sallam. Allahumma salli ala. When the Holy Prophet attempted now to implement Islam in Mecca, the misconception was that he was looking to convert the entire region. Okay. The misconception still is, because I've had these talks with a lot of these youth, that there is this compulsion in religion. That they take on this Taliban, Daesh, ISIS mentality, either you're with us or we will behead you. And they take this ugly brush and they paint it with the entire deen of Islam today. And it becomes a very black and white, on and off, one and zero binary deen. That's not what the Prophet was all about. The Prophet was a part of this pre-Islamic Arabian peninsula, Arabian civilization, Arabian environment. And he did three things that are very crucial for us to understand. Now, let me say one thing here while I'm here. I'm bound to upset my elders in this ashra, and I don't want to do that. I love all of you. But the reality is that identity is a compound discussion. Meaning what? There's multiple factors that help us identify who we are. Part of it is where we live. So the term Canadian Muslim that drives some of our elders a little bit mad, it's not a blasphemous term. Now you can, to make yourself feel better, no, bolo Muslim Canadian, fine, no problem. You can put Islam first, no problem. Where you put the dash is up to you. Where I'm headed in terms of this historical discussion. Because by the way, the Quran also invites us to study those before us. فَصِيرٌ فِي الْأَرْضِ فَانْذُرُ كَيْفَ كَانَ عَقِبَةُ الْمُكَذِّبِينَ. Travel the earth. Do sayr of the land, as you say in Urdu. Do sayr, travel the land. فَانْذُرُ, look, meaning ponder. What is the aqibat? What is the ultimate destiny of those who have denied Allah? Study their lives. Where did they go wrong? What happened? Where was the misguidance? How could it be? If you study Fir'aun himself, it is an intriguing study. This was a man who didn't deny God. He did not deny God. He believed in a higher power for sure, but he believed in a God of other gods. He believed in God to be the Sarparast, the God of the heavens. But this everyday Zamini God is people like me. I'm the God of Egypt. That God doesn't have time to come down and do these small little, you know, minute things. I'm in charge of you guys now. But absolutely, and you see that all throughout the story of Nabi Musa leading up to his drowning. There were moments of softness Fir'aun had, but he had horrible advisors that would whisper in his ear and bring him back to his corrupt ways. Letter number 31 in Nahj al-Balagha, beautiful letter written by Imam Ali to his son Imam Mujtaba. Beautiful. Paragraphs and paragraphs of nothing but treasures. Advice that you and I could really change our life on today. In that very same letter now, he says, study the lives of those before you. And he gives his own example. I studied civilizations before me to the point where it felt like I walked with them through their ruins. I was there in their successes. I grieved in their deficiencies. Why? It's important to pick up signs before the actual misguidance happens. So it's important that we understand this history. Now, very, very briefly, the Prophet came and had adopted three principles. Because not everything in the Jahiliyyah era he threw out the window. No. Didn't reject everything. There were certain principles and certain cultural norms inside of Arabia that either he accepted and used for the betterment of Islam, number one. Number two, he either redirected towards God, or number three, outright rejected. I'll give you examples. The outright rejection, of course, were things like burying daughters alive. There was no compromise there. You can't use that for any betterment or any goodness. No. He replaces that now with this Surah An-Nisa that elevates women inside of Islam. Easy example. Where he would redirect the focus was on this tribalism, this loyalty towards your tribe. During that pre-Islamic era, you lived and died by your tribe. You were known by your tribe. This loyalty towards your tribe was unbelievable. If one person of that tribe was disrespected or killed, the entire tribe would go and avenge that. You were known not by your name, not even by your father's name sometimes. Which tribe do you belong to? And they would apply a certain stigma to you based on that of the tribe. That's incredible. The Prophet says, take that loyalty now instead of the tribe now and come to the tribe of God. The exact same loyalty, redirect towards God. And the final one that he actually used for the benefit, one example is, the Arabs back then, even today, have an immensely strong memory. Their hafizah was very qawi and very strong back then. And he used that for the Quran. A wahi would come down, the Prophet would summon two different groups of 10 people each. Those who would do hifz of the verse, those who would write down the verse. You teach the verse to the 10 hafidhin, say, look, memorize it, repeat it back to me, make sure your arab is right, go back and teach others. He would also explain the ta'wil and tafsir of every verse, go back and use that memory of yours to store that verse in your mind. On the flip side, he'd say, make sure you write down the verse properly. Why is that important? Because after his death, when there's a whole discussion in Ulum al-Quran that I don't want to get into, about the compilation of the Quran, there is a massive difference of opinion. Some say the Quran was compiled already. Others say no. Imam Ali, 6 months after the death of the Prophet, sat in his home and compiled it in the order of the Nuzul of the Quran. This whole idea that Shias have their own Quran comes from this concept. I don't want to go down that route. I'll really go on a tangent. I don't want to do that. Enough to know that when there were individuals who wanted to do a little bit of tahrif, a little bit of distortion of the Quran, add some surahs, take some out, it was these individuals who did hifz of the Quran that would come and say, look, I was mawjood there when this wahi came down. This was not a surah of the Quran, this was a hadith by the Holy Prophet. This was not a hadith, this was a surah. For example, Surah Falak and Surah An-Nas, one group had said these are nothing but du'as against black magic. They're not surahs of the Quran. It was these Arabs who used their memory to say, no, absolutely this is a standalone surah. So the pride by which we say that our Quran was never, ever distorted, not one fi, not one an was removed or added, part of it comes from the idea that the Prophet used this memory of theirs for the betterment of Islam. My point is, this wasn't an arrival of Islam, let's wipe the slate clean, everyone who believes in everything, that's wrong, this is wrong, let's start fresh. No. He did his best to integrate into an existing community and present an option and present another avenue, another sabir, another path of which you can attain success in.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is englishradio@irib.ir.
Rahi Karim Adi Alim Hali Hakim Mati. شكور ودود قيوم رؤوف صبور مجيد اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد يا مؤمنين صلوا عليه.